This is a rain replay from 2003.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to this potpourri of rain. This week we bring you some bits and pieces from both the past and recent past. Often in the late 1980s and early to mid-1990s, Hap Holly, KC9RP, RAIN founder and producer, sifted through copious downloads of postings from Packet Radio, an early version of digital amateur radio. We'll bring you two of these posted pieces here. First, an item we've borrowed from January 1994. It appears to be an editorial from the American Radio Relay League's QST magazine, but the author was not credited nor the source identified. The title is The Wolf Hong Legend. Your reader is a former Chicago area packet bulletin board sysop and RAIN reader Larry McGlure, KB9DIP.
Amateur Radio's Wolf Hong Legend. In an institution as old as amateur radio, traditions and symbols of the art appear and become part of it. Our traditions are many. Among them, our long record of self-policing, our dedication to public service in experimentation, our instant response to the call of our country in time of war. But of the symbols, only one, aside from the ARRL diamond, has become a part and parcel of the framework of amateur radio. The symbol of its finest traditions, its long and glorious history. That symbol is the Wolf Hong. Every ham should know its origin. It seems to us that now is a good time to retell the story of this famous and beloved part of the very fabric of amateur radio. Visitors to headquarters and to W1AW seeing either the original or one of the many replicas in our buildings ask what it means. New members of the Royal Order of the Wolf Hong, initiated during the midnight convocations of the Order at League conventions, ask, but where did it come from? I mean, in the beginning. It started back in 1917, in the very earliest days of the ARRL and QST, when an anonymous amateur, writing under the title The Old Man, created a wonderful series of humorous stories in the magazine. In a pithy, irascible style, he assailed all that struck him as criticizable about ham radio operation of the period in his famous Rotten Radio series, beloved to this day by all who read it. He mercilessly exposed the poor operating practices of the day, yet did it in a way which drew chuckles even from those recognizing themselves as the special targets of his ire. In one of those stories, Rotten QRM, he launched forth with examples of some of the poor sending cluttering up the band in a particular QSO to which he was listening. The gibberish included the words Wolf Hong, which apparently was being used by someone on somebody else. It turned out to be one of those priceless pieces of spontaneous word invention. Instantly, it caught on with the gang. Although the old man, or Tom, himself admitted at the time he didn't know exactly what a Wolf Hong was, it quickly became something with which to both attack bad operating practices and to discipline their perpetrators. Within 3 months, the editor of QST found it necessary to write an editorial on the growing demand from the membership for Wolf Hongs. How rapidly the situation might have developed had not World War I intervened is a matter of speculation. But the tradition had been established. The Wolf Hong created in the minds of thousands of amateurs as some mythical instrument of torture to be used in enforcing good operating practice in amateur radio. When QST resumed after the war, one of the first contributors was the old man. In an early 1919 issue, he contributed an article, Rotten Starting, to work off steam on the slowness with which our government was getting around to let us operate again. At the conclusion of this article appeared the following. In the meantime, I am sending you a specimen of a real live Wolf Hong, which came to light out here when we started to get our junk out of cold storage. Keep it in the editorial sanctum, where you can lay your hands on it quickly in an emergency. We will be allowed to transmit soon, and then you'll need it. The object was duly received at headquarters. The editor, fully mindful of the historic significance of the occasion, took the instrument to one of the first board meetings in New York on May 3, 1919, subsequently duly reporting in QST that, quote, each face notably blanched when the awful Wolfhong was laid on the table, close quote. By an action still a part of the league's official records, that board voted that the Wolfhong be framed and placed on display in the headquarters offices of the league. There it remains to this day. Now we know the significance of the Wolfhong, but we don't know the significance of its weird shape. Not even the beloved old man, revealed after his death as none other than our first president, Hiram Percy Maxim, ever explained that. Nor was the precise manner of its use ever prescribed, although it perhaps may be guessed with a little imagination. But as the years passed, it continued to grow in the affections of amateurs across the country, old-timer and youngster alike. It became the inspiration of the Royal Order of the Wolfhong, the amateur secret society of the ARRL convention. Today it is thoroughly entrenched in the lore of amateur radio as its most sacred symbol. The Wolfhong. See it when you next visit ARRL headquarters. Author unknown but posted on packet by Pete, KC8ER at KC8ER, Northeast Ohio, Ohio. And I'm Larry McClure, KB9DIP for RAIN.
Now for an item I read for RAIN in the spring of 1994, entitled Shack Wall Sign.
Notice to all visitors, what you are about to witness is an amateur radio station licensed as, insert call here, by the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. Before you ask the questions, here are the answers. 1. The total cost of this equipment cannot be discussed as it creates marital conflicts. 2. No, we cannot send a message to your brother in Hong Kong. We suggest you call Western Union. 3. This is strictly a hobby. We do not have the facilities or the time to fool around with TV sets, radios, or hi-fi equipment. We suggest that you see a serviceman. 4. Yes, the antenna in the backyard is essential to the operation of the equipment. 5. The furthest station we have contacted has been in the Ubangi land. 6. The cards on the wall are called QSL cards. They are confirmation of contacts we have made with other stations. 7. It is technically impossible for this station's equipment to interfere with television reception, telephones, or stereo systems. Any interference problems of that nature are caused by design flaws in the home entertainment devices themselves. Number 8. An amateur radio station may only be operated by a highly qualified, technically skilled electronics expert. It takes dedication, training, and intelligence to reach the level of competence that justifies one to be licensed by the United States federal government. Therefore, it is not considered inappropriate to show proper awe, respect, and general obsequiousness when I discuss my hobby or operate the controls. Furthermore, if you are granted the extreme honor of being invited to speak into the microphone, please observe the following rules. 1. Speak in a low and soothing tone. 2. Do not disagree with me in any manner. 3. Say no bad words and tell no off-color jokes. 4. It is customary for guests to make complimentary remarks about this station and its licensed operator when talking to other hams on the air. Do not touch anything, turn any knobs, sit on equipment, etc. I have lost several visitors by electrocution in the past few weeks. Thank you for your cooperation. That from KA3VSP at KA3VSP.poundEPA.PA. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ for RAIN.
Something a bit more current will be coming your way after station identification. This is the RAIN Report. Welcome back to the RAIN Report. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Now an item called Ask Elmer, which is actually a column published in the Courage Handy Ham's weekly email newsletter. Here is a sample of that column, recently voiced and recorded by Ken Locke, N8PJN.
Ask Elmer. My HF rig seems to have developed an intermittent problem. I hear stations at normal volume, then the signal will suddenly drop off, only to return just as suddenly. My rig is an all-solid-state job, so is there anything I can do myself to find the problem, or do I need to send it in for repair? Elmer says, I never send any of my equipment in for repair until I've tried several basic tests to see if I can fix it myself. One exception to going the complete do-it-yourself route is that if your equipment is new, you may void the warranty by opening it up. If your gear is several years old, you may want to take a shot at some basic diagnosis and repair. Besides, you have to do some preliminary tests no matter what, just to be sure there really is a problem with the rig. Now for the symptoms your rig has. Here's what I suggest. Start with the outside of the rig. Are the controls set in their normal range of operation? Something like a squelch control set right at threshold could cause your signal to pop in and out. Check the antenna connection from the back of the rig to any peripheral, like tuners or SWR bridges, watt meters, and the like. Does the signal vary when you wiggle or pull the coax? Are the PL connectors tight? Check peripherals, especially antenna tuners, whose switches or roller inductors may need cleaning and may be causing intermittent condition. Check the antenna. The best test is to switch to a second antenna if you have one. If the intermittent is present on one antenna but not the other, you can bet you have an antenna problem, not a rig problem. One clue to antenna intermittents, there are usually more problems on windy or wet days. Okay, we've eliminated everything outside the transceiver itself. It's time to push hard on the top and sides of the rig to see if flexing the case a bit causes the intermittent condition to change. Does moving the audio control or the RF gain control cause the problem to come and go? If so, a squirt of tuner cleaner, usually found at places like Radio Shack, into the controls from the back may be in order, but only if there's an opening in the controls. If the conditions change when you flex the case, or if it doesn't, it's still time to take the top off. You can continue your flexing and probing safely with a plastic tool, such as an IF tuning stick or plastic straw. Never use a conductive tool such as a screwdriver to flex or probe within a live circuit. Say, maybe I ought to mention something about safety. I'm talking about probing around in a late model 12-volt rig, not tube rigs with high voltages. And in any case, you should take care not to ground yourself while working on any live circuit. Use your plastic probe to poke around those multi-pin connectors inside your rig. Sometimes oxidation on those babies causes intermittence. When you find one that's responsive to your probe, shut the rig off and first unplug the offending connector, then reconnect it. Chances are it will be good to go for years after this simple procedure. If probing the circuit board helps you to locate a particular area on the board that responds to light touching or flexing with a plastic probe, you may have a bad solder connection on the circuit board foil. At this point, you will need a strong pair of eyes to examine the board to see if there are any cracks in the foil itself or around component leads. Repairs are done with a light-duty soldering tool and a heat sink to protect sensitive components. Power, of course, must be off when you make these repairs. If the components are exceptionally hard to reach or delicate, you should stop right here and button the patient up for a trip to the rig hospital. As it is too easy to cause further damage by doing the bull in the china shop routine among delicate surface mount components, unless you really know what you're doing. One last thing, never, never force anything. If it doesn't want to come off, unplug, or whatever, you are doing something wrong and should leave the work for a professional rig doctor. Good luck. Note, Elmer's email address is elmer@handyham.org. This column appeared in the Handy Ham's e-letter for January 24, 2003. Reprinted with permission. For the Rain Report, I'm Ken Locke, N8PJN.
And that's this week's Rain Report, in which we borrowed something old and something new, just for a change. The Rain Report is copyright 2003 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.